Car Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
And indeed, you're very welcome in once again between now and 3 o'clock. Kildare Focus, some topics we hope would be of interest to you. Clem filling in for Caoimhe this week on the programme. It's World Sight Day, and Optometry Ireland spokesperson and optometrist John Weldon will tell us more about that and maybe what we should be doing about those valuable little eyes that we have. Author, historian, travel writer Owen Corry on St. Bridget's Legacy Abroad, a talk he'll be giving in Kilcullen in the coming few days. And also, of course, news that Irish people travelling to France for the big match on Saturday evening might experience some problems with the strike impending in France. Owen, being the travel expert that he is on Worldwide Matters, will be able to tell us maybe and give us a bit of advice on that. Also, it's that time of year when many of you will be doing your tax returns. Shock, horror. What a job. Anyway, Senior Accountant at Irish Tax Rebates, Jerry Scully, will tell us what you need to know about filing your 2022 tax returns and also a little on Budget 2024. And we'll have that item that we were to schedule yesterday, but due to the wonderful interview that we had about menopause, well, we decided to, that Catherine brought us, we decided to just defer this item. Producer, screenwriter and script editor from NACE, his first film, Verdigre, is a film that shines a spotlight on ageing and domestic abuse. Going to have its premiere in, I think, the US of A, of all places. All of that and bits and pieces of news as they come between now and three. And, of course, also, we'll be keeping you up to date with some good music, also time permitting. Now, one of the stories I just want to bring you before we start about World Sight Day is to do with that developing story in Cork. We know that Gardaí have been conducting searches with diggers in a residence around the area of Yohol in County Cork in the last 2 days, as they had upgraded the disappearance in 2017 of 45-year-old Tina Satchwell from a missing person investigation to one of murder. Yesterday evening, they released a man in his 50s who had been arrested without charge, with the usual details being forwarded to the Director of Public Prosecutions. However, there have been developments in the last couple of hours. Skeletal remains have been found at a house in County Cork, in Yohol, by Gardaí investigating the disappearance of the 45-year-old. The remains, which were discovered at Miss Satchwell's own home, have not been identified as of yet, but Gardaí are satisfied they're human remains. A man has been arrested in Yohol in connection with the investigation. Assistant State Pathologist Dr. Margot Bolster and Forensic Anthropologist Dr. Lorraine Buckley visited the site this morning, and it's understood that the bones were discovered during a search yesterday evening. Members of An Garda Síochána Technical Bureau and the local divisional search team have been examining the property since Tuesday. The man, as I said, that was released yesterday evening, we don't know is it the same man has been rearrested or not. Last March, on the 6th anniversary of her disappearance, Gardaí reviewed an appeal for the public's health, and now that very significant development, sad development, that skeletal remains have been found at a house, which is Miss Satchwell's house, the missing 45-year-old, at her home. So we're not going to speculate any further on that story as investigations continue. But if there's any further breaking news on that, we will certainly bring you that as well. Okay, let's move on then. And employers have been encouraged to ensure good eye health in the workplace and support the well-being and productivity of employees. The call is made by Optometry Ireland to mark World Sight Day, which takes place, is it tomorrow? Indeed, on the theme of workplace eye health. Is today the 12th or the 11th? Well, let's find out anyway, because John Weldon is with Optometry Ireland. He's a spokesperson and he's an optometrist himself. Good morning, John, or good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Clem. Good afternoon, listeners. And today is International World Sight Day, 12th of October.
Right, you're breaking up a small bit there, John. You might move a little for me, please, just until we check that signal.
Yeah, is that any better for you, Clem?
Yeah, that seems more stable now. John, what's the difference between an optometrist and an optician?
Okay, really good question. And optician, apart from being a lot more pronounceable, is not a legally protected title. So you could have an optician shop or an optician as a title. But the legally protected title in Ireland, as in other places in the world, is optometrist. So the optometrist is the person who's authorised and legally entitled to examine sight and prescribe glasses and refer or treat minor eye illnesses.
Just again, no, because I'm just missing something here. Yeah. So you're saying an optometrist, it's a professionally protected designation.
Optometrist is a legally protected title.
And what does that mean?
So we're the optometrists are legislated and regulated under CURU. So the CURU is the regulator in Ireland for all health and social care professions like radiographer, physiotherapist, etc. And optometry is a protected profession under that regulation.
And so where does that leave an optician?
Well, so an optician is not a legally protected. So you can ban an optician that is a protected title.
Right.
Is an optician shop. So right. An optometrist is a person who is legally entitled to examine your eyes and write a prescription for spectacles or contact lenses and treat or refer as appropriate minor eye conditions and diseases.
Well, then, can I ask you, John, just so that I get a full handle on this, because I wear glasses anyway, I'm absolutely.
Yes, I have done myself since 3 years of old.
Well, I tell you, when I take them off, the world disappears, let's put it that way. But then, does that mean that the person examining my eyes and basically writing up my prescription for my glasses is always an optometrist?
Or an eye doctor.
Or an eye doctor.
Yes.
Right. Okay. That's news to me anyway in regards to that. Tell me anyway what World Sight Day is all about and why it's been designated on that basis. I know that we often hear from Africa about, you know, infected water, I think it is, can cause problems, and particularly in children and so on and so forth. But over to you, John.
Yeah, no, so you're talking about trachoma, that disease carried by dirty water, which causes river blindness, as alternatively called. So World Sight Day is this day every year in October, and we've focused on many different things over the years. Preventable sight loss, like you described in Africa, is one. But particularly this year, we're focused on how our eyes, the importance of our health and safety regarding our eyes and eye performance in the workplace. So protection for our eyes, setting up our workplace correctly if we work with a computer, and the health and safety responsibilities of employers towards their employees.
All right, I'm actually an employer here. I'm the employer, and I'm looking at four screens at the minute around me. And of course, I work on two different screens, literally, from early morning until late evening. And I have found my eyesight has changed considerably over the years. So tell me what people who are using screens in a prolonged manner, like myself, like the employees in here, like in every other area of employment, what are the dangers?
Well, I think we can all identify with the tiredness and fatigue that's caused by excessive screen use, can't we?
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So the two areas we really want to look at are, first of all, the ergonomics of our workstation, how our workstation is set up in relation to how the computer is in front of it. Is it correctly positioned in height and distance, etc.? Is the screen suitably adjusted for brightness and contrast? Are we seated in a set and comfortable position? And then secondly, how our eyes perform the task that we work on the screen.
Right, let me look at some of those aspects for a moment now. I'm intrigued about you mentioning the brightness. I would say that in 20 years working with computers, I have never amended the brightness or otherwise of my computer screens, which quite frankly amazes me now when I hear you mention it. Because even a little bit of toggling might help in terms of the glare of the screen. In terms of the position of the screen, I know that for a long, long time I worked with my computer planted on my desk, and then I wondered why I had neck pain and getting a bit of back pain and everything else. So I then raised my screen by about the best part of 10 inches off my desk, and I suddenly found I was looking straight ahead and things were a lot more in focus. Is that the kind of thing you advise?
Yeah, so those you've correctly identified those two elements, Clem, very importantly. First of all, how your eyes perform. So you think about the brightness and the contrast and so forth. And I might make an example. Most modern smartphones have an automatic screen brightness adjustment. So if you're outdoors looking at it in normal sunlight conditions, the screen has a set brightness and contrast. Whereas if you pick it up in the middle of the night to check your emails or something, it has a different level of brightness and contrast. And in exactly the same way, our adjustments on our computer monitors affect the efficacy or the efficiency of how we're looking at that screen. You've rightly identified the setup of the workstation, and you found yourself how a simple movement of the position of the screen can not only improve your visual performance, but also your physical performance, where you might get a sore neck or sore back from bad posture.
Absolutely. Now, one thing I want you to tell me more about. What's the 20-20-20 rule?
Yeah, so really to try and help our well-being whilst working on a screen, we've looked at this little mnemonic, 20-20-20. So every 20 minutes, take 20 seconds to refocus on something 20 metres away and to blink 20 times if you can think of it. And that way you're interrupting the visual task on the computer, giving your eyes fresh tears around the surface of the eyes and allowing a little bit of a breather from the task.
How often should we get our eyes tested? Because I know in this country, whether it's teeth or health in general, we tend not to go to the respective professional until there's a problem.
Yeah, isn't that's such an Irish approach to things. We wait for it to go bang or stop working entirely before we go and see about it. But a routine eye examination with your community optometrist should be carried out of the order of approximately every 2 years for adults.
Right.
Some of us have other conditions and may need to be examined more frequently. Or, for example, if you suffered with glaucoma or were developing cataract or had some macular degeneration, your optometrist might want to recall you more frequently.
Can I tell you, just mention two things to you, one about the importance of a good optometrist, and that is 15-20 years ago, I went for my usual, just get the eyes tested, and my optometrist said to me, there's something there that I'd like you to get checked out further, and I'll send you to whatever. And off I went to the eye and ear to discover I had a detached retina. I never knew I had a detached retina. I don't know why I had one. That was, on the one hand, the importance of a good eye examination by a really good professional. And the second thing then is, you mentioned macular degeneration. Now, many people have that. Many people might not know what that is. Please tell them.
Okay, well, the macula is the most light-sensitive part in the retina, that part of the back of the eye that must translate the light into a picture. So degeneration is where that area stops working correctly. And you're quite right, a good regular attendance with a good optometrist will pick up and help to manage all of those problems. In your own case with the detached retina, because there are no pain receptors inside your eye, you didn't feel anything was wrong. But fair play to your optometrist who was able to identify and get that dealt with appropriately.
Well, I have Similarly, to say fair play, because then the consultant told me, when I said to the consultant, detached retina, sure, I felt nothing or saw no difference. That's right, he said, but one of these days the lights might have gone out and you might be driving your car, you might be doing something very, very important, and suddenly, boom, darkness. So in that sense, the importance of... So remind us again, how often would you advise we get the eyes checked?
So for that, adults, it would be recommended internationally around about the two-year period. If you have more concerns or have other conditions, then absolutely go as regularly as you need to. And I think if you have any worries or concerns about your sight in general, pick up the phone, go and visit your local community optometrist and have those worries allayed.
And I want to leave you, I want to finish with what might be an old wives' tale. Certainly when I was young, we were always told, get back from that television, you'll go blind from being too close to it. Is that kind of a concern regarding what you said about the proper distance from screens, which I think is advised about 70 centimetres away and about 10 to 12 centimetres below eye level, or 50 to 70 centimetres away? How many centimetres in an inch? About 3, isn't it? So you'd
be 2.58, I think, is the conversion. I think the worry is we shouldn't use language like that, that the screen use might cause those sort of difficulties. But we do know that overuse and overdependence on the screens can be impactful on our eyes. I think we can all experience that sore, dry, salty, gritty tiredness when we've done too much work on the screen. And that's our eyes telling us we should have taken a break.
And have you a comment regarding whether we should be applying any kind of lotion on a daily basis for good eye care? I know for the ladies that's kind of a different thing, where they have to remove the eyeshadow and eyeliner and that. But for those for those gentlemen who might wear eyeshadow and eyeliner as well, but is there a general eye care routine that one might follow on a daily basis, aside from the very, very sensible precautions you've outlined?
Well, some good practice would be a good, well-balanced vitamin-rich diet we know to be helpful to our whole bodies, and our eyes being part of the body, that's also a part of that. Also, protection from excess UV, so we might be thinking about wearing our sunglasses and so forth outside. And they're all means of helping to preserve and protect this special gift of sight.
All right, good advice there, John. Employers like ourselves here being encouraged to ensure good eye health in the workplace, but also anybody and nearly everybody at this stage is using a computer or some kind of screen, and to adopt good, solid practices to preserve our eyes. And remember that 20-20 rule again. Every 20 minutes, look at something 20 feet away for at least 20 seconds. You'll get the break and you won't be googly-eyed like Clem, who's looking at them all day long. John Weldon is a spokesperson for Optometry Ireland, and he's also an optometrist, and this is World Sight Day with the good advice. Good talking to you, John. Thanks for joining us here on Kildare Focus.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Welcome back then, and you can get your messages in like Anna has to 0833 97 97 97. You can WhatsApp us or text us on that number, 0833 97 97 97. Anna says, really enjoyed the chat yesterday about menopause. Very enlightening and was a good laugh as well. Keep up the good work, Anna. Thanks for that. I think Catherine was marvellous yesterday. I was talking to some people about this and they said, do you know what? That woman, she explained menopause and the impact it has on women in a way I've never heard it explained before. And she did so in such an upbeat, happy way. Wonderful. And we will have Catherine back, I'm sure, in the future as well. Now, historian, author, travel writer, and general man of many talents indeed, Eoin Corey, is presenting a talk in Kilcullen this Saturday that looks at other places in Europe that commemorate St. Bridget. Well, I don't know whether there were planes or ways of travelling when St. Bridget was around, but I'll tell you, based on some preliminary information that I've seen from Eoin, it seems she really got the places far, far afield altogether. Eoin Corey, good afternoon to you and welcome to the programme.
Oh, good afternoon, Clem. It's been a while since we sat together in the press box at the All-Ireland final.
Oh, Jesus. Tell me, but what an occasion. What?
It was the Clare, when Clare won, and of course we both have Clare connections. I'm first generation, you're actually a Clareman. There was this amazing moment when Fergal Toohey stepped on, scored the goal and stepped off again, but
that's
nobody
right.
knew he was on the field, especially the Offaly defenders, and I circled his name in the programme and passed it over to you while you were commenting, so you could actually
you did indeed
the name of the goal scorer.
And I think half the Clare team didn't realise he had come on and gone off in the space of 60 seconds either. It's one of the conundrums of All-Ireland history back in 90.
Yeah, it was a stroke of genius, you know,
back
so
in,
many strokes of genius, yeah.
Back in
95. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever asked you, Eoin, about given that your name is Corey, because we could be cousins, because the whole maternal half of my family are Corries.
Well, as they say in Clare, if you're not related, you're connected. I have third cousins who elevate me to first cousin when I'm in the good books, and down to fifth cousin when I'm not. But it's a very Clare name, and I'm sure there is a connection which we can explore offline at some stage.
We will indeed. And, of course, the name originally, O'Corry Osgailge, is from a renowned scholar back in the days, a couple of centuries ago, Eoin O'Corry.
Yeah, I was named for him, obviously. Kelly, you know, with the spelling right and
you
everything.
Actually, there you are. You are Ono Corios Gaelga. So you're named after that great Gaelic scholar who, there was a college, there's an Irish college in West Clare, Cláiste Ono Corí, named after him. Now, there you go, one. We must have a chat about all of that at some time. And as I've said before, folks, if you want the definitive history on Kildare GA, if you can locate a copy of it, Ono Corí is your man. You told me some years ago on Kildare Today, Owen, that you might take up the challenge again of updating that. I know you're such...
It is underway. COVID and the pandemic was very good to me in that it grounded me and kept me in Kildare for a little while. So I did a good gathering of about 200 more interviews for us. And everything was set to go in book terms, means it's about a 6-week clear your head project, but it is in shape. The decision is when to go, because it's going to be 40, believe it or not, it's going to be 40 years since it was published next January. When we come to 2024, I was obviously 3 when I wrote it, but
we're coming
around to that time again. You know?
That's quite remarkable, actually. I'm the proud owner of a copy of it, and anybody who wants to know about the minutiae of the history of Kildare GA, if you can get hold of that, I'm sure it's in the libraries as well, and we'll certainly look out for the new copy, Owen, and we'll love to talk to you on the programme, on one of the programmes about it as well. Now, these days you're regarded as the lead travel commentator in Ireland, if I might say so, and well deserved it is, because you, as well as being the local historian, author, broadcaster and all of that, and we'll talk about things travel, maybe regarding rugby fans in a moment, but tell me a little bit more about this talk you're going to give about St. Bridget's legacy, not here in Ireland, but abroad.
You see, we think of her as a saint, like a big Irish saint. In fact, she was much bigger than that. You know, another of the things I did during the pandemic was try to get myself back into Old Irish, which is the form of the language which they stopped speaking in 900 AD, which is even more convoluted than the modern language listeners who struggle through PEG for their Leaving Cert don't need to go near. So looking back at the early biography, she was the first Irish saint to get a full biography, and she got it about 100 years after her death. There were 6 of them within a very short period of time. By the year 1300, her fame was right through Europe. St. Bridget of Sweden, who's better known, you know, in the German-speaking country, Sweden, Scandinavia nowadays, was named because St. Bridget of Kildare was so famous. And what happened really was that other things came along and sort of edged her out. You know, the fact she was female after the Normans arrived and made a very male-oriented church knocked her out of fashion. But what I'll be talking about tomorrow is how. We know very little about the original women, the saints, but we know a hell of a lot about the footprint she created. Her relics in Lisbon, I've been to see them. There's churches dedicated to her, Cologne and Strasbourg, parishes all through Europe. And they're really a small smattering of what was there before, because she was as big, much bigger than St. Patrick. She was as big a personality, an Irish personality, in the European sense.
But would you tell me, Owen Corry, your expertise nowadays, as well as emceeing and curating various events, public events and speaking events and conferences and all of that, your primary expertise, if I might put it, our focus at the moment, is worldwide air travel, of which you're an acknowledged first man. How did St. Bridget's influence get so far afield, you know, in times of what was virtually nearly prehistory or 400 or 500?
There's a couple of things happened. The Roman Empire was collapsing as she was around. She died in 504 or 500. You know, that's why we get to 1500 next year. So as reading and writing and books and all of that were destroyed and all of that shape of the Roman Empire, it took about 300 years to get it back. And the people who really helped to get it back together again, the Emperor Charlemagne would have been very important in bringing them in right across Europe, were Irish monks. And the culture they brought with them and the respect they had for St. Bridget and how important she was in their literature just planted Bridget everywhere. She you know, there are very few European countries that don't have some sort of connection with Bridget. Now, to our disadvantage in Kildare, you know, because we're pushing out this message how big she is and how important she is for that marvellous work by the Bridget 1500s. And there's a series of lectures, by the way. I have a very hard act to follow. I'm following Sister Rita, the wonderful Sister Rita Minahan of Solace Breed, and Liam Kenny, who does a lot with your programme, will be doing one, and Mario Corrigan will be doing one, and Niamh Witcherly's Maynooth College has done one. But she went very high and then almost disappeared. Even 1,000 years ago, her realm had come really to the end of its influence. So she's so far back. She's probably a first wave Irish saint in a way that is to her disadvantage nowadays. But there's another thing that's really important, because that pious nun that we saw in our school books has gone really far out of fashion. Holy Wells, you know, miracles have gone out of fashion. But because she was so robust, and she's more miracle, she's 126 miracles in the Baha Breach alone. That's more than St. Patrick and St. Colin Kill put together. And all of that folklore and all of that wonder tales and everything that go with her make her very adaptable. Somebody at a conference I was at before Christmas talked to her. She said she'd make an ideal candidate for the Green Party. She'd be a Greta Thunberg, you know, of the modern generation.
Yes, she would.
You know, in the 80s, it was common to think of her as a red-haired, fiery-haired goddess. And, you know, she was pre-Christian. So it seems that the Bridget that everybody wants is there for them.
Right.
If you want her to be a pious nun, like, you know, saying, devoting, giving up marriage to serve God, which was sort of the model put before our grandparents, she's there. But she's also a lot of other things to every single generation that comes along. And that makes her such an amazing saint.
I think
be very proud of her until there.
I think said Sister Bridget Minahan would be very much cut off that particular cloth. The talk, by the way, is St. Bridget's Legacy Abroad, to be discussed in Kilcullen on Saturday morning, hosted by the County Kildare Federation of Local History Groups, and part of the Bridget 1500 celebrations, which Owen has referenced. It begins at 10 a.m. in the Kilcullen Community Centre, I imagine that's where it is, and free attendance and open to everybody to come along, and you'll be fascinated not just by Owen's story, the great story of St. Bridget Abroad, but also the other speakers that he has referenced, Sister Bridget and Mario Corrigan and others on the day as well. Federation of Local History Groups.
Just to correct you there, Clem, the series of lectures are going on at different times.
Oh, sorry.
They're very easily accessible. Sister Rita's was a while ago. Niamh Witcherly, Liam is coming, and Mario Corrigan are coming. But the other great news is they are being recorded and put online. So if you miss one, you can pick it up whatever you put in your own time.
So
what's happening on Saturday is just the Federation of the History Society of Kildare also hosted the AGM. It's going to be a very interesting day. Great discussion. I end up always learning more from these things than I actually give out.
All right. 10 a.m. Saturday morning, folks. Free attendance and open to all. The fascinating story of Bridget, the great, great traveller, Bridget. And Owen, just before I let you go, because we've heard this earlier today, and regards, we have a news clip that we'll be using of you on our news about this, that we got from the network as well, that Irish rugby fans heading to Paris on Saturday might encounter some transport issues because of an expected strike.
Yeah, so Friday is the big day. It looks like the airports are going to be okay. Marseille will be well hit. Orly, we've lost one cancellation, and they're going to have to cancel 15% of the flights to Beauvais, but Ryanair look like they've protected the rugby flights. The rugby flights are okay, and on the ground, getting around isn't as big a deal because the impact is Friday, not Saturday. If the Orly Or was out on match day, it'd be a big deal for trying to get in and out of Stade de France. I think we're going to get out of jail on this one, but the French, you never know, they're waiting with another strike every time we get to relax a little bit.
All right, it won't put the Irish fans off anyway, because they'll regale the whole place in song and dance and
absolutely
everything else. So, Owen, it's great speaking to you again. I look forward.
Always a great pleasure, Clem.
I look forward to the next next edition of your GAA history and that talk on Saturday morning in the Kilcullen Community Centre on the legacy of St. Bridget Abroad. And if you want to find out more about what Owen Corry does, you can go directly to his website, Owen, which he spells in the lovely Gaelge way of E-O-G-H-A-N, owencorry.com. Very simple. And find out more about all the things.
Travelextra.ie as well, Clem.
And travelextra.ie is exactly. I was about to mention travelextra.ie for all the transport information around the world. I don't know how you get all that information. You're encyclopedic. And I say that in awe of you. Owen, wonderful to talk to you again. Thanks very much for joining us and have a great day.
Always a pleasure.
All right, that's Owen Corry then, and very shortly, just after this quick break, we're going to be talking about your tax returns. Don't you just love that?
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan.
Okay, welcome back then. I mentioned one other historic event today, and that is RTE's teletext service, Airtel. Remember that? Will be switched off today after nearly 40 years in service. It first went live on an experimental basis in 1986 and was launched a year later. The service provided up-to-date news as well as TV schedules, sports scores and gave television viewers the option of watching shows with subtitles included. We thought it was fantastic. The broadcaster says its closure has been planned since the publication of its strategy 2024 back in 2019. Of course, it has been superseded. I mean, when last were you on Airtel? Because now at the press of a button on our smartphones and everything else, do we do teletext anymore? I don't think so. We have info buttons on our remote, which tell us a little about the programme. Do we have to, there are so many apps now and news websites and everything else. There isn't a company that doesn't have, in the media circle, including ourselves, we have the website, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, two Twitters in fact, and we have the KFM app for radio and everything, and so has every other media group. So poor old Airtel, we say slán leat to it today after 40 years on air. It might still be there until midnight tonight. You might want to have one long, lasting, sad look at it because you'll never see it again. I wonder, Jerry Scully, when is it since you last looked at Airtel?
I used to look at it back in the day. I'd be looking up soccer results and stuff like that. I'm not that young either. So I do remember it all right back in the day. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to be young because or old because it's still there up to today. But it's going to be gone. The trouble about it, the only thing that I ever complained about it was, it could throw up something that had three pages on it, and it was very difficult. You could put it on hold. But then it took ages for the page 2 to come up or page 3. Or when you clicked on the title, it might come up at page 3. So you were reading the end before you read the beginning. But anyway, that was then, this is now. It goes into the history books today. Jerry Scully is a senior accountant in Irish Tax Rebates. You're in Athy, Jerry, aren't you?
Yeah, we're based down in Athy. We've been down here for the last 15 years.
You have indeed, sir. The principal there being an old rugby mate of mine, Martin Brennan.
Yeah, Martin is the owner-director here.
He is indeed. I say a rugby mate, let's put it this way now. Martin Brennan would have been elite. And boy, a guy who was fast. If you could catch Martin Brennan, you were very, very fast. Clem,
he's very elusive, I'll give him that anyway.
Clem was more the journeyman type, you know. But let's put it this way. When Clem would be reaching maybe 20 metres out from the back line, Martin would already be crossing the end of the field with the ball under his oxter and everything else. Anyway, you're very welcome to the programme. And many of us are feeling the brunt of the ongoing cost of living and, of course, what we heard in the budget as well. But it's that time of year, is it not, when people start doing their tax returns? What advice have you for them?
Yeah, so the tax filing deadline for people who earn non-PAY income is the 31st of October. Now, it is extended, like the Airtel, it is extended if you do it online to the 15th of November, but we'd advise people to get their receipts and their expenses together and to try and submit them to Revenue, you know, as soon as possible, effectively. Obviously, things that came in the budget, they don't affect this return, because this all relates to the 2022 tax year. So, like I said, it pays to get it in on time, because you avoid, you know, interest and penalties. And as you know, the tax rates are quite high anyway, without adding interest and penalties on top of that, effectively.
On the broader front, away from those who are talking about non-PAYE income, but many people on PAYE, they often neglect to claim allowances that they would be entitled to, or relief that they're entitled to.
Yeah, and that's a big part of our business down here in Italian Irish tax rebates. You know, there's tax credits such as, you know, the rental tax credit, there's medical receipts, tuition receipts, you know, a dependent relative, if you're paying for a relative to be in a nursing home, and there's a lot of credits that go unclaimed. One that's particularly overmissed, it is the rental credit, which has been boosted to 1,500 per couple in the budget. It's up from 1,000. But what we find is a lot of people have kids in college and they're paying for the college digs and the college accommodation, which is quite expensive. But the parents can actually claim the tax credit there for paying for that. So that'd be quite a big one that we'd often find people missing out on. And of course you have work from home as well, people working from home as well. Even if it's only 2 days a week, there's a credit there for that as well.
And the other main one would be, before we let you go, would be medical expenses, would it not?
Yeah, medical expenses and dental expenses. So you can get 20% back on the cost of them, like prescriptions and just GP costs, you know, the hospital costs, consultancy. So it's right across the array of medical expenses. So what we'd advise people is to gather the receipts. And like I said, we Irish Tax Rebates can help you out on that. We have an online form on our website, irishtaxrebates.ie. It only takes 60 seconds to fill out. It's quite straightforward, and we take it from there. And a lot of people across Ireland use our service. It's over 300,000 clients, so we're a trusted partner for a lot of people.
I tell you, if I knew that Martin Brennan was going to become a multi-millionaire with 300,000 clients and everything else, I'd have hung on to his jersey while he was scorching down the field there in regards to that.
But no comment there.
Anyway, that's Gerry Scully, Senior Accountant at Irish Tax Rebates, located in Athy. And as Gerry says, they're on the website, irishtaxrebates.com, if you want to. Because people, there's probably a couple of million out there that's not claimed in terms of whether it's rental, medical expenses or whatever else. So check it out. Don't just look at your payslip and say, geez, they're after going with half it in tax again. What am I going to do now? Anyway, what am I going to do next? I'm going to move on to this item, because we're joined by Paul Fitzsimons, who's a producer, screenwriter and script editor. And he's a good nace man into the bargain as well. Good afternoon, Paul.
Hi, Cam. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. And sorry about yesterday. We just got carried away with the menopause.
No problem. No problem at all.
In regards to that, well, we didn't get carried away. Actually, it was an excellent night. Tell me a little about yourself, Paul Fitzsimons.
So I'm a screenwriter. I started off as a screenwriter, having worked in the construction industry for a long time. And then I became a producer back in 2016 when I wrote a feature film for a director in Kerry, and I joined the production as a producer on that film. It's called The Gift. And since then, I worked as a development producer for a Galway production company. And then during COVID, because there was nothing else to do, I went back to college and got a postgrad diploma in film production, after which I set up my own production company, Prelude Content.
And where are you based now?
I'm literally based about 5 minutes away from you. I'm in Jiggerstown in Naas.
Oh, are you? Really?
Yeah,
oh, good.
Exactly.
I didn't know that. And tell me about this film. Am I getting the pronunciation right? Is it Verdigris?
It is Verdigris. Well done, yes.
Yeah.
So Verdigris is the passion project of writer-director Patricia Kelly. And I've known Patricia for a long time. She's a fellow member of the Writers Guild. And she came to me last summer with this that she was going to, that she got the finance to make small amount of funding, and she was going to produce this, and she asked me to come on board as a producer. So this is going to be my first production for Purdue Content, which so was very exciting for me. And so we shot the film in January of 2023 for 3 weeks, a very quick shoot in what was possibly the coldest 3 weeks of the year, which was great. And then we had a very busy few months because we were determined to have it finished for the Galway Film Fla in July, which we absolutely very closely we were very close to the line, but we got over the line and we got it into Galway. We had a fantastic screening at the Galway Film Fla, and the film won the award for Best Independent Film.
Oh, fantastic indeed. And now tell me about this North American premiere.
So we're leaving on Saturday, and the film is going to screen at the Newport Beach Film Festival in Newport Beach, just south of LA. And that came off the kind of the back of our success at Galway. We were approached by Newport Beach in the run-up to Galway, and then when we won the award, that kind of sealed the deal, and they were very keen for us to screen the film in Newport Beach. There's a very big Irish contingent and film community in Newport Beach, so they were very interested to get Verdigris over for the festival.
Is that the same Newport Beach of the location of the famous Newport Jazz Festival?
No, I think that's Newport, which is in on the other side of the country, which is in East Coast. But Newport Beach is in LA.
So you're lucky, guy. You're all. How many of you are heading off to California?
So there's a big bunch of us going, actually. So there's actually five of us going to be there, and six, in fact, because the director Patricia is going. Patricia Kelly, I'm going. Our two stars who are absolutely fantastic in the film. Geraldine McAlinden and Maya O'Shea, there were our two leads in the film, and they're going to be there too. So, and our composer, the composer of the score for the film, he's actually from the States. He's from Seattle, so he's going to fly down as well. And then Patricia's husband, who is also in the film, is going to be there too. So six of us in total.
Well, listen, it's fantastic news altogether, and we wish you the best there. And please make sure that when it's all over and you're back, to let us know how you got on.
Absolutely. I'd talk about it.
Have a great, great journey. You lucky guys off to California, and we're left here in the cold and misery.
Thank you.
Paul Fitzsimons, producer, screenwriter and script editor from Nace, based over in Jiggistown, as he says, just a stone's throw across the way. And his first film, Verdigris, which did so well at the Galway Film Fla, now heading to North America for his premiere at the upcoming Newport Beach Film Festival.